focus on what we call the parousia, the second coming of the Lord Jesus Christ, his coming in glory. Not all preachers choose this theme and will very often fit in with other Advent hit themes, such as the theme that we're using today. But I like to choose the things that people find a bit difficult, so I always do preach on this. I was inspired to do this by a supernumerary minister in the circuit in which I served before I became a minister, Reverend Lawrence Steadiford, who has gone to glory since. Lawrence always used to ask to be put down to preach somewhere on the first Sunday in Advent, and churches used to queue up for him. They would request him. And it was because Lawrence preached some of the most inspiring sermons about the second coming of Jesus Christ. At the heart of Lawrence's preaching was his belief that the Lord will not come until the gospel of Jesus Christ has been preached to every person on earth. That was the kernel of what Lawrence said. And by preaching, I don't just mean those of us who are accredited within a particular church, because you are in as good a position, in fact, often better position, to preach the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ to the people you meet than I am. I meet mostly churchy people who've already heard it. But the people that you meet are probably mostly not churchy people, and a lot of them haven't heard the message. So bear that in mind. People have different reactions to this idea, this belief of the Lord Jesus Christ coming again in glory. I wonder how you view it. Let's be honest. Is it something that we long for and hope for and dream about, like the little apple tree wanting that one bright star? Or is it something that we actually fear? When there is an unexplained loud noise in the sky, do you think, oh, this is it? And what's your feeling about it? Some preachers, some Christian people these days struggle with this idea of the imminent coming of the Lord Jesus Christ in glory. After all, the early church believed that it would happen within one generation. So as the first witnesses to Jesus' earthly ministry began to die off, they saw that as the sign that before this next generation of preachers and Christians died, the Lord would come again. Well, probably more than 20 generations have passed since that early church belief. And here we are still waiting. And that causes many of us actually to wonder if indeed the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ in glory is actually ever going to happen. Like that little apple tree waiting for the angel to return to grant the wish of the star. Whether or not the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ in glory is going to happen in quite the way we might expect from the Bible text, or whether it has already happened in individual lives, and what we are really waiting for is the coming together of all those individual lives and all those individual acceptances of Jesus Christ to come together to transform this fragile and broken world in which we live. I'll leave you to think about and to ponder. I suspect that those who are suffering would greet the coming of Christ in glory with more enthusiasm and less trepidation, perhaps, than we, living our largely comfortable lives, would. There is a part of me that thinks, well, I'm doing okay, I'm enjoying my life as it is. I'd like just a little bit longer before you come, Lord. But we will, according to Matthew, and also there's a passage in Mark, never know when the hour will come. In my past life, as you will know, I was a comprehensive school teacher. And for many years, I taught in one of those temporary cabin-type classrooms that we used to call terrapins. They were freezing cold in the winter and boiling hot in the summer. And very often, there were walkways all round them. And as happens from time to time, some religious group had forecast the day and the hour of the end of the world. And it happened to fall in the middle of break time one Monday afternoon. And I was in my classroom as the RE department, there was only me within the school, preparing for my next lesson, when I became acutely aware of the fact that my terrapin, my classroom, was surrounded by pupils. So I went to the door and I said, what are you all doing here? Why aren't you in the playground? Haven't you heard, miss? Haven't you heard? Didn't you know the end of the world's going to come? So I said, well, why have you come to me? Do you think I know a back route into heaven? Or that I'm going to say, it's okay there with me, let them in. And then I got my Bible, I found the Mark's Gospel passage, and I read to them, you will not know the day or the hour. So I said to them, so the fact it's been forecast means it's not going to happen today. Go back to the playground and enjoy the rest of your break. And sure enough, we're all still here 20-odd years later. We will not know the day or the hour. We will not know the day or the hour when we will be called to acknowledge who we are and to be face to face with God. But what we can be certain about is that when that happens, whether it is at the point of or after we die, or whether it is indeed when Christ comes in glory, what we can be sure of, and this is our hope and our joy as Christian people, what we can be sure of is that having accepted Jesus Christ into our lives, we need not fear judgment. We need not fear the judgment of God, because however unworthy we may be in ourselves in terms of who we are and our actions and our lack of action, nevertheless, the price of our sin has been paid for us in and through Jesus Christ. And therefore, because of what he has done for us, what God has done for us in and through him, we need not fear. I remember that wonderful line from And Can It Be? Bold I approach the eternal throne and claim the crown through Christ my own. I always want to punch the air with my fist when we sing that, because it is a victory. It's not our victory, it's God's victory over sin and death. And what we need to do, all we need to do, is to accept God's victory and claim it as our own. But what about this end of the world as we know it stuff? There's a reference in that Matthew passage to Noah and the way in which leading up to the days of the flood, that great cataclysm that God is described as having brought upon the world because of human sin, people just carried on as normal. Even when Noah built his ark, people ridiculed him. They didn't believe him until, of course, the rains came and the ark was closed, and then it was too late. Like some of you, I grew up under the shadow, the dark shadow of the mushroom cloud of nuclear weapons. And my generation, we lived in fear of that happening. And I remember the Ban the Bomb marches, and I remember Flower Power. I am a child of that era. The emphasis on love, not peace. On love and peace, not war. Sadly, of course, because of our sinful human nature, a lot of those dreams and a lot of that preaching, and it was in a sense preaching about love and peace, was done under the influence of some form of drugs. I wasn't involved, I hasten to add. I was a good member of MethSoc in my university days. But nevertheless, even when people of my generation saw that cataclysm coming and saw the light and sought to protest against it, nevertheless, human sin caused many to veer off the wrong way, with terrible results sometimes. And then, of course, later on, there came to be fears of overpopulation, which would cause mass starvation in some parts of the world. And we saw the great famines like Biafra and so on. And that passed too. And then, of course, in this recent period, we've had financial crisis and the fears of social meltdown. Don't think it can never happen. Think about the people of Zimbabwe and what they have suffered as a result of financial meltdown and mismanagement. And now, of course, in this very recent period, we are called, often by those significantly younger than ourselves, to wake up to the almost inevitability of global warming and the consequent flooding from melting ice caps and populations being displaced and so on. The big circle, from Noah's flood to the possibility of the results of climate change. It's all very grim, isn't it? I'm sure there are those who wake up and lie awake in the middle of the night worrying about it. It's all very grim. There are a whole lot of different reactions, aren't there? To deny the truth of the threat, to pretend that those who have highlighted it have got it all wrong is one way, and there are some very prominent people who seem to be on that path. Or maybe there is that amazing trust that so many people put in scientists and in world political leaders to somehow find a way around it without most of us having to change very much in the way that we live. A way to avoid the consequences. And then, of course, there are those who become activists, working to educate and persuade humanity to change our ways, which are destructive and selfish, before it is too late. And we've seen a lot of that on our televisions just recently. But what should our perspective be as Christian people in the 21st century, living in a time when certainly our salvation, to quote Romans, is nearer now than when we first believed? And by we, I mean the church. Our salvation is nearer now than when the church was first formed. Has to be, doesn't it? If God is going to bring everything to consummation, we have to be closer to it now, nearly 2,000 years later, than they were then. What do I mean by salvation? I mean God's sovereign will being recognised and obeyed on the earth. That's what I mean by salvation. The coming of Jesus was the beginning of that, and we are working it out. We are working our faith through until that time when the work is completed and God once more is totally sovereign and recognised as being totally sovereign. Salvation is the fruition of God's plan to bring the whole of creation back into harmony with his sovereign will. Don't ask me how God is going to do it. I don't know. And let's not spend time and waste our energy speculating about how God is going to do it and when. We've been told not to. We've been told to be watchful. We've been told to be awake and alert. And we've been told to be ready. And that is our job. There are those who think that because in the end God's will be done and Christ will come again in glory, they can just stand back and leave the world to its own devices until God comes and sorts it out. I was deeply shocked, and this is many years ago now, when I was collecting, I think it was probably either Action for Children envelopes or Christian Aid envelopes. You know, in the days when almost every house in the country used to have an envelope put through its door for a variety of charities, and then we would go round and collect them. And I knocked on one door of what appeared to be a very affluent house, and the lady came to the door, and I explained to her why I had come and said, I delivered the envelope, but I have got some spare ones if you've lost it. And she said, "We believe the world's going to end soon, so we don't give to charity." I thought, that's extraordinary. Extraordinary. I was gobsmacked. I just said, okay, and disappeared. But I was absolutely gobsmacked that someone could have a kind of a faith that exonerated them from having compassion for their fellows because it was all going to be over soon. That doesn't make any sense to me. I hazard a guess and suspect that doesn't make any sense to God either. Because our duty, our job at this present time is to continue to live in the light of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And at the core of that gospel is the love of God for you and me and the whole of creation, sinful as we may be. Our job is to continue to live in the light of that, continue to live out our faith conscientiously in that respect until such time as the Lord comes in glory. And so I would commend that view to you. Whether the end is nigh or not, what God is calling us to today, tomorrow, however long each of us has left to serve God's purposes, or indeed this particular worshipping community, is not to speculate about when or how it will all be over, but to go on living faithfully in the light of the gospel. Confident that God is indeed, to quote a hymn that sadly doesn't appear in Singing the Faith, God is working his purposes out as year succeeds to year. The rest, friends, is truly in God's hands and in God's good time.